hör historien till Diamela som är salgs- och marknadsföringsansvarig hos Ceylon House. Welcome here.
Thank you.
Did it ever snow in Cuba?
No, not at all.
It's summer all along.
Yes, summer. And I have a funny story. For example, when my husband met me, he invited me to Havana, to the capital, and it was like 20 degrees. That's, I think, the lowest, 19, 20 degrees in the winter in Cuba. And I was with a hat, with a scarf. So I was freezing already. And he was, no, I cannot invite you to Norway. In that way, I cannot invite you to Norway. Totally different.
Yeah, it's a little colder here, you can say.
Yeah.
But my stepbrother's father is actually with someone, a Yunelis from Cuba, actually.
Yes.
So
Ingemund.
Yeah, Ingemund. Yes. So yeah. She's very sweet and good person to talk to, actually.
Yeah, they also enjoy being here. She has also another friend. We are 4 Cubans here in Alta. 4 girls and my son.
Ah, nice. So how is Alta treating you?
Yeah, good. I love that you are so close to nature here. I enjoy being outdoor, going to the mountains, taking just small tours with my dog, with my son. So it's very nice. But it's, of course, very different because you don't see so much people. In Cuba, you are very social. If you are bored or if you want to do something else, you just go and sit in a park and meet a lot of people. You always meet somebody new. But here it's not like that. But it's nice too. I like the Norwegian way of being very respectful, very responsible. So different, but nice. I like it here very much.
Do you think like Cuba is a more like open culture?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Because here it's like cold and bitter and maybe the people are more open in a warmer area, maybe.
Yeah. I remember since I started to come here, it was very strange for me that in the summer days, people was totally different. They were smiling, they were friendly, they were open. More open than normal. And I remember I asked my husband, why is it like that? Is the weather, the weather change all our mood. We depend on the weather all the time. And now I understand that better. And now I do the same. When it is a warm day, I go out and I drink coffee outside. I want to use it to eat some sausage outside with my son. So I understand now better.
Yes, when it gets like summer, it's like everyone awakes again because like they are in the winter, like they are in the bears who are laying to sleep for the winter, like in the dvale. I don't know what that is on English.
Yeah, but it's understandable. It's totally different, especially here that it is dark. It's very different.
Yeah, it have a lot to say the sun. Course. But when you lived in Cuba, what was your first job?
Well, I started to work since I was in the university. My university career was 5 years, and then since I was in second year, they were needing some teachers. They were starting a program with the government of Venezuela to prepare some social workers. So they asked if us in the university were able to take that challenge, and they chose a group. And then I was part of that group, and they trained me. I remember it was in the holidays from first grade to second grade in the university. And then I started to be a teacher since my second grade in the university. And I was teaching social communication to the social workers. And it was a very nice experience. After that, I continued working with the Cuban social workers, so we continue teaching them. It was a project that the revolution made there, first with the students from Venezuela and after with Cuban students.
So the social workers, they work with people, obviously.
Yeah, they were, it was when the revolution of Hugo Chavez was starting.
And they were needing. What time of the year was this?
It must have been in 2001.
Okay.
When I was starting in the university. And I remember that it was there was a need of people that were able to go deep in the community to work with people that was having lack of health, having lack of a job, that had social challenge. So they were needing that first to discover this, where they were, and to diagnose the problem, and also to find solutions for this, for integrating more to the community and to integrate them also to the revolutionary process in Venezuela. So we were working to teach these social workers to be able to communicate, to have empathy, to have tolerance with them. So that was our main role. And after that, also Cuba opened the project for social workers, because also in Cuba we have a lot of challenging social items, like there was a lot of alcoholic people that was coming back from jail, how to integrate them to the society. So it was also a need for having social worker, and then I was teaching communication there.
So how was it before the revolution? Did you talk about the revolution?
In Venezuela.
Yeah.
How
was it before the revolution in Venezuela?
So it was a capitalistic country, and there was, in the opinion of these people that came to prepare us, there was a lot of interest in the community. So that's what the revolution wanted to do, to integrate the community or the poor people also as a part of the community, and to give them better rights. So that's what we think it was, that the revolution wanted to integrate everyone and to give the same rights. But of course it was not perfect, and we know that after that they got even more challenge.
That's a lot of things we have not experienced here in Norway. But
I was never in Venezuela. I was just working with the social workers in Cuba.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
They were coming to Cuba. We had the schools that prepared them to be social workers, and then they went back. That's why I cannot tell you my experience. I just know what I heard from the students.
You just trained them.
And of course, these students were very much in favor of the revolution and were there because they wanted to help the revolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought for a second that Venezuela was in Cuba, but it's my geography was bad. So, how when you came to Norway, did you start in Ceylon House straight away, or?
Yeah, there is a history back in Cuba, because after this work as a teacher of social communication, I graduated from the university, and then it was a new career, called sociocultural studies was my career, so it was new. It was also a project from the Cuban Revolution, and therefore there was no teachers. So they chose three of us in my classroom, and we became teachers of the new generations of social workers, sociocultural workers. So I was teaching a research methodology of the social research first in the university, and it was 2 years, but I think I continues being very shy. And like my husband used to say, I'm very perfectionist. I want to do my best all the time. And therefore I was struggling being a teacher. I wanted to know everything if my students ask me for something, and therefore it was very hard. I didn't enjoy being a teacher. I felt that was not for me. So after 2 years in the university, as a teacher in the university, I decided to do something else. And then I started to work in the Ibero-American House. And this is part of the best memories I have in Cuba of my professional life, because there I develop into a international relation contact for this institution is the Ibero-American House is the institution that promote the history and culture of the Ibero-American countries, so Spain, Portugal, and the Latin American countries. And therefore, I had to work with the ambassadors, with intellectuals, artists that wanted to perform in Cuba or to look for them on internet or to go to embassies and talk to the diplomatic people to get some help to bring artists and intellectuals to Cuba. And therefore, I learned a lot about marketing. And then I decided in 2013, I decided to take a master. So I made a master, the name of the master is History and Culture in Cuba, but I made it with a marketing strategy for getting artists and intellectuals to Cuban cultural events. And that's what I think brought me to the professional life here in Norway. Of course, I'm married with my husband that owns Ceylan House, but at the same time, I had already experience with the marketing as a cultural marketing that is kind of promotion. But when I came here, I was already in love of Ceylan House and I wanted to work for Ceylan House. So we started to work together and then I took the role of marketing and sales for Ceylan House.
Mm-hmm. So when you was in international relations, was you like the contact person for people who were traveling into America and Cuba?
Yes, to the Latin American countries and all over the world. For example, once my husband met Marit from Marit Project, and they are friends, and he asked him, Marit, what about you going to Cuba? And she said, why not? And then he said, well, my wife is working in a cultural institution that brings artists and intellectuals to Cuba. Do you want her contact? And then we started to communicate with her manager, Olga Soljanic. And yes, they were in Cuba. So Maret Project came to Cuba and presented a Sami culture that was great experience for them and for us, the audience that they had. And in that moment, I was working with the ambassador of Guatemala that had been ambassador of Guatemala in Norway too. So he was ambassador in Cuba, but before he had been in Norway. And he was very... he wanted to help the native culture. So he was very, very motivated to help me with the project of Marit and Clement. And therefore, we took activities in Holguín, my province, but we also organized activities in Havana. They met other embassies. The embassy of Norway also helped me. And they made presentations in Havana. So I think if you ask Marit Project, they have great memories from Cuba. And we also have great memories from them going with that beautiful clothes they have and talking about Sami culture that in Cuba they didn't even know so much about Norway.
Yeah, so you are very social in your work life. You have been very social up to this point.
Yes.
So you like to meet new people and talk to people from other countries and cultures.
Yes, it's very funny because I stopped being a teacher because I was very shy. But then my work in the Ibero-American House made me to open up. And for example, I had to go to cultural events all over Cuba, in other provinces. And then I just had to say, hello, I'm Diamela. I'm working for the Ibero-American House and I would like to invite you to our events there. And just to introduce myself and talk to them. And like that, I managed to bring important artists and writers, for example, intellectuals that came to Holguín, my province. They are like the musician Andy Montañez from Puerto Rico, who was a success there. There was a year that we couldn't make the events because there was a hurricane in Cuba. I don't know if you heard about the Ike hurricane that destroyed a lot in Cuba.
I was doing some research about Cuba before this podcast, and I saw something about, I saw something about the hurricane, actually.
Yeah. In that year, there was no way to make a... cultural events we couldn't do because we didn't have the budget. There was no possibilities to make a cultural event when the population was so damaged, when they were losing their houses, losing their belongings. So then we found out that we had to do something else, and we made the Solidarity Brigade. We called, I don't know if brigade is the right name in English, but it was a group of artists and intellectuals from all over the world that wanted to come to Cuba to contribute not only with the donations of material things, but also with their art. So we came to communities and we prepared a simple scenario there, and we made performance of dance, music. We read poems for them. So that was a great experience. And that's why I have so many good memories from my previous job in Cuba.
So your job was to bring hope to the people in disaster.
Yeah, in a way.
When you were contacting a lot of people, did you ever experience any rejections when you were inviting people to arrangements and events?
Yeah, of course, because for example, when we invited these artists, we couldn't pay their tickets, we couldn't pay not even their overnight, anything. Sometimes the Cuban government didn't have the money for that, so sometimes there was just possibilities to use the transfer for them, to help them with the transfer to the activities. But the rest, they had to pay themselves. And it was very hard to write to artists and tell them, we invite you to Cuba, come and present your art for us, do all this, but we cannot pay you anything. We cannot pay you for your performance, but not even your overnight stay. And so it was very, very hard, I can tell you. And it was challenging to get people to Cuba, but there was always many of them were very sympathetic, find Cuba very sympathetic, and they wanted to help, and they wanted to do the best for that. And we also, my work with the embassies also helped, because sometimes the embassy was like a sponsor of these activities.
Okay.
And sometimes they were not able to pay, for example, the overnight, but they were able to pay the flight ticket, for example, and that helped a lot. So that was part of my harder work, to be able to convince them to come and to be able to convince the embassies to take from their budget to support these activities.
Yeah, but because I think that maybe if you're an artist, if you're in the start of your artist career, I think there is not a lot of money involved in that.
We didn't get important artists all the time. Sometimes it was just writers that were in the university, young people that wanted to come. And sometimes we even had to offer them accommodation in very low budget places, in a way that we could sponsor a little bit that. But it was, of course, very challenging there.
Were you close to, when this hurricane was active, were you exposed for the hurricane? Was you in real danger to?
No, not really, because the Cuban government really care about this. We have a hurricane season there in Cuba, and in that period they come with a lot of information in the television, and every day we get what you call the weather forecast here.
We get
it there, and then they prepare you. When there is a hurricane coming, they prepare you and they take all the measures, and the whole community involved in organizing we clean everywhere that it can be, that can stop the water to go,
oh, yeah,
to
you flow. Like, you seal everything, like the water don't
in
flow
in. A way,
we
clean the streets, for example, in a way that the water can continue if there is a lot of rain.
Yeah.
And for example, we have to, our houses are not as strong built as here. So we have to reinforce, to come with, for example, there are some houses that have I don't find the word in English, but we have to use bricks over the roof of the houses just to make it more stable, that the wind don't take that.
Yes, so you have like a type of wire over the house,
and
bricks on the...
Or bricks and...
Yeah.
when there is no brick, for example, in the place where my husband and I bought our house and we built our new house, it's in the coast, it's in a village. Mm. And there people, a lot of people is very poor. So what they do is that they go to the beach and they filled up a sack of sand.
Yeah.
And that sand, they put it over the roof.
Okay,
and that protect that the roof don't fly together with the wind in the hurricane. Cubans are always finding their way out. We are used to that.
Is it, do you have like basements you can go in?
No.
There's no, nothing
no.
like that.
Nothing like that. We just have to go to the safety, the safe room in the house. Yeah. Or it's something that is very different from Norway is that in Cuba, our neighbors are our family. So in the neighborhood, when the hurricane is coming, your neighbors come and say, no, I don't think you're safe here. You must come to my house. And there you stay and you eat together and you help. There is I think it's very important for us to be to have solidarity with the other ones. And we help each other because we don't have a lot, but then we try that we have to share with the others. And therefore, in the hurricane period is where we used to say that we kind of prove that we really care about the others.
Well, it may be sound wrong, but if everything goes well, I will think that's a good like bonding experience because you are fighting disaster with each other, actually.
Mm.
So, but it sounds quite dramatic, and it is... I know that Florida is very, it's much hurricanes in Florida.
Yeah, it's
is
exposed
it,
to.
Yeah, is it quite, is it similar in, it's, I think it's very bad in Florida.
Mm.
But yeah, it's very close, so it's maybe like same frequency of hurricanes.
Yeah, but I don't know if they prepare themselves like we do in Cuba, because I think... the main point in Cuba that we don't get even more damage than we get is that we prepare ourselves. We get a lot of information previously, and therefore we prepare to not lose any person. Material things we always lose, but we try to not lose any person. So everyone try to be in a safe place there, and the government take care of that. And there is also a system that, for example, in the countryside where people live even in worse conditions, they even take them, they come with buses and they take them to safety place. There is like kind of a refugees situation. I don't know, but they take schools that they have overnight conditions, and there these people sleep and they have food, and the government take care of that. So I think the most important thing for us is that we are prepared when a hurricane come. It doesn't come as a surprise for us. I don't know if in Florida they do the same, because I suppose that there they have better conditions, material conditions, but I don't know if they get informed like we do, like we do there in Cuba.
I saw like in 2004, did they lift the like import-export restriction from United States?
It has been a kind of flexibility in Cuba, but the bloqueo continues there. Ah. And therefore, the Cuban government struggled to get the food and to get things for the people there, because it's very difficult when there is a country that don't allow others to get business with you. So there have been some flexibility, and of course Cuba have improved a lot. Before, we didn't have access to internet. Before, there was no possibility for Cuban to have private business, but now there is a possibility. Of course, it's not like a capitalistic countries. You cannot come there and say, I want to invest here. But there are other possibilities now that you can have, at least Cuban can have their private business. Before, it was not like that.
So it's beginning to be like a more capitalistic country?
I shouldn't say like that. I don't think so, because you cannot. I think if you are planning to invest in Cuba as a tourist, you cannot invest more than the 49%.
Okay, you cannot.
No, you cannot own more than 49%.
Okay, so the state needs to own 55. I don't think we are
close to capitalistic system.
No, no, of course.
No.
It's like similar to China's situation. I think they're also, they own a lot of the,
yeah,
the private businesses.
Yeah, the government own, yeah, mainly everything there. Mm. I remember when I came to Norway, I was all the time asking to my husband, and is the airport from the government? Is the hospital from the government? I was asking for everything because I was used that in Cuba, everything was owned by the government. Even when we met, I don't think it was still any possibility to have private business. So it was even worse for me to come here and to see that everything was owned by the private.
Yeah, it's quite a shock,
yeah,
actually. Yeah, there's lots of differences. It's quite fascinating to hear about other countries and how they have their challenges.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but how is what is a now when you work on the Ceylon house? How does a normal day look for you?
Well, I don't know if you know, but we live in Alta. We have a house in Alta, and then we stay here because I have a son that goes to school in Alta, and then during the weekend we are in Ceylon. Mm. So my normal life is being here in Kunskapsparken in the office, working with marketing and sales, and my husband is sometimes there in Ceylon taking care of the guests and taking care of the business, the boat, the weather forecast, the house, everything. And then every weekend we go there. Every weekend, every holidays, autumn holidays, and every time we have the chance. And in the summer, we are most of the time there in Ceylon. And I love it.
Yeah. So how, when you work with the sales and marketing, what is the, like, the main platforms you use for marketing?
Yeah, it's very funny because when I was working in Cuba, I didn't have so much access to internet. I was the only one that had access to internet in my job, even if it was called Cultural Institution International. I was the only one and my director, but she was so busy that she didn't have time to work so much on internet. So I could get her time on internet. It was just one computer, her time on internet and mine. And what I was doing all the time, it was working in the night. When everyone else went home, then I had my hours on internet. So I was working with my hours and the hours of my director.
So did you get like a quota? You get like four hours of internet you can use
something
freely.
Like that.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And sometimes in the weekend, they also helped me because they wanted to get more people to come to Cuba. And therefore, that made it very challenging when I came to Norway because I didn't know what Instagram was.
Yeah,
I had a Facebook account, but I didn't really use it like I use it now for marketing, with marketing purpose. So here in Norway and for Ceylon House, I have been learning how to use social networks. And of course, we have Facebook, Instagram, our homepage, YouTube channel. But we mainly use Facebook and Instagram for marketing purpose.
Mm. So, when you in Cuba, is it common to that families have like computers in the house, or is it
now? Yes.
Now,
but before it was not like that. I think my first laptop, I got it from my husband. First, I was borrowing one from a cousin of mine to make my master project. When I met him, I was already working with my master project, so I have borrowed a computer. And he said, no, you need a computer. So I got my first laptop with my husband, because it's not like that. You need somebody from other country to come and give you, because I think now you can buy it. But before, there was no possibility to buy a computer there. It was just a computer that were in the institutions from the government that you could use in your working time, but not in your sparing time.
Mm. How was it the power supply or the power infrastructure in the country? Was it like stable, or do they turn off the power on night, or is it?
Yeah, they do that, especially now they are in crisis there. They do that a lot. Yeah, and sometimes they let you know, today the neighborhood here will be out of electricity from this time to this time. But sometimes you get it as a surprise.
Okay.
And for example, before Cubans didn't have mobiles, they didn't have laptop, but and didn't have internet access. Now they have. So I see a lot of complaints of my friend, oh, they took the electricity and I didn't manage to charge my mobile. Now I cannot even be on internet. I had to go to the park because there is not that you have internet in your house. And that's another challenge for me. When we go to Cuba, I struggle to do my job because you cannot have internet in the house. You have to go to a hotel or to a park. Huh. And for example, when my husband was there the first years that I was still not working for the company, it was very funny for me to see him. He came and worked a lot in the computer, and then he was, I have to go to the park to send the mails. And now I understand, because I will be in the same situation when I go there now. I have to go to the park to send the mails, to answer to our customers, and to do all the work in the social networks.
Because is it like a public Wi-Fi there in the park?
Yes, there is public. But you have to pay. You need to buy a card where you have some hours, like a quote. Yeah. And then you have some hours to work on internet.
Yeah, well, then it's a start and you get the work done. That's good.
Yes, especially now, because before I was not working with this, but now I'm very depending on internet. I need that people get to know what Celand House is. I need to show people what they can find there. So I'm all the time trying to do more and more job on the social networks. And for example, via Facebook, we reach our regular customers. In Celand House, we have regular customer fishermen that come year after year.
Okay.
So that's very, very nice that we can keep in touch with them. Even now, if I publish Northern Lights, even if they are fishermen that are interested in fishing, they comment that, they like it, and they share it because they really love Celand. And they love now that they have the possibility to see Celand all year around. Because before it was not like that. I was not here. Sik was working alone and he didn't really had a lot of work with marketing. So now we keep our regular customers all the time informed about what is happening on Celand, but we also via Instagram. I used to say that in Facebook we keep our regular customers alive, but in Instagram we are getting all the time new customers, and that's very nice. That's in a way how I use the social networks nowadays.
Is mostly of the customer base from other countries, or do you have do many people from Norway come and visit, like from the south, or
not so much. You know, when I came to Norway, I didn't speak the language. I had to go to Norwegian school. Now I can speak Norwegian, but it's not perfect and it's challenging still.
Yeah.
So therefore, it continues being a challenge for me to reach the Norwegian market. Even if I know that most Norwegian speak English, understand English, it's more difficult to get them. But we don't have so much groups from the south that come here. And therefore, we work fishing tourists during the summer and the autumn. We are open also for groups in the spring and in the autumn, but there is not a lot of Norwegian that really visit us. In these corona times, of course, with the Tilbrinferie in Norge, Sommerferie in Norge, with all this, we have been able to get Norwegians to visit us. And I think even if it has been hard in these corona times, it has been good in the way that people have knowledge about Celand now. People know about Celand a lot, and not only here in the north. So a lot of people comment, wow, I want to go there. So we really hope that later we start to get some more people from the south, because before it was not like that. And we have been using all these platforms that have been open during the corona times, where people get to know the country. So I expect to get an increased number of customers from the south, yes. Mm-hmm. But now we don't have that.
Yeah. When you did you start working in Celand House before or after the corona started?
We moved here in February 2019.
Yeah.
And since I came to Norway, by first time I fall in love of Seiland. I fall in love of Seiland House, the work that my husband was doing. So I was already starting to help him with ideas. I remember I opened the Facebook account like the second or third year I came, and I started to help him. We didn't have so many pictures because he didn't dare to ask the customers, can we take pictures, or he was too busy for that. But the shy girl became more open, so I started to ask for pictures, and we started to make quite a lot of activities there in the social network. So, and then when I moved here in February 2019, he had been getting with Origo before now Orinur. He had been getting this possibility to be an incubator company. So we got help from them, and immediately when I moved here, I could start to work in the office. And that helped quite a lot, because then I could have a place where I could have my things, and where I could, at the same time, I was learning Norwegian. So I was during the day in the Norwegian, and in the afternoon when I was finished, I came to the office to start to work. So it was before Corona. And when we moved here, we were planning to be Seiland House a full year destination. So we started to plan in that February 2019 to work the whole summer with fishing tourists, to have Norwegian groups, because sometimes we have especially local groups. And then in the winter, we started even to try. We had a reindeer there. I don't know if you have heard about that experience. We had the whole winter from 2019 to 2020. We had the reindeer infants that people could go and feed him and walk around. He was, for example, if you went snowshoeing, he was following us. So sometimes we were out of the fence and we just jumped and went inside of the fence to go around with him, because he was very social. So he followed us. That year we also had king crabs under the pier. And then we were trying to lift them, to take some selfies, to feed them. So in a way that we could try that product for a future winter activity, because our planning was during the winter to have Northern Lights customers that came for seeing the Northern Lights during the night, but they had some that at the same time they could have some activities to do during the day. So reindeer, feeding reindeer, snowshoeing with the reindeer, king crabs under the pier, trying some snacks with king crabs, pictures in the beautiful fjord landscape that is there. There is a lake also, like 4 kilometers from the house. We were planning to make ice fishing. We even try activities with ice fishing there. So we were planning to be a full year destination before Corona came. After that, we were planning in the spring to have skiers, and then to come back to the normal activities from the summer with fishing tourists, trekkers, and conference and group. But then we had to stop to dream. It came Corona, and we had to concentrate in what we could do. And during this, like, almost 2 years now, I have been following all the webinars I can, trying to learn more Norwegian, trying to prepare myself. At the same time, we are part of a Visit Arctic Europe project.
Okay.
So we have been participating physically, and also with digital farm trips, workshops with tour operators that are very, very interested on Seiland. So all these Corona times have been very useful for me as a learning process, and at the same time to make relation with these tour operators that we have access thanks to Visit Arctic Europe.
So you have used time to expand your network and get new knowledge.
Yes.
So have you experienced, do you experience that Norway is opening up, but is the customer from other countries, are they coming now? Or is it yet low activity on Seiland House?
Yes. As I said, this was the plans before Corona came. So now we don't dare to keep open the house in the winter when we don't know if we will get customers. But I don't know if you know, but we have Alta Adventure company. So when we closed down Ceylan House, now we are more or less closing down for the season to open again in February, March, and see if we can get skiers, because that's what we are working for now, to get the skiers to come in the spring. But well, that we are in Alta most of the time. And what we are planning to do is to follow up the activities with Alta Adventure. We are offering their Northern Lights tours, snowmobile safaris in the mountain plateau of Finnmarkspida, ice fishing, snowshoeing, and we tailor-made activities due to the requests that we get. But these are the main products that we can deliver. And we have been already getting requests. We had already two Northern Lights tours, and we have already like 10, 12 reservations for February, March. So we see that people is starting to come back in Alta Adventure. But in Ceylan House, we already have almost 40 reservations for the summer, for next year. So we already have a lot of reservations, and we have big expectations, because there is a lot of people writing, I want to go, and just looking for the time. I want to see when I can get my holidays. But of course, this is our regular season fishing tourists. We don't know how will it be for skiers still. And now when we see that Corona is still going up and down in many countries around, so there is no way to say how will it be, at least this new spring season that we want to open up for. But it would be very nice if we get skiers to Ceylan, because I used to say it's a gem. It's a place that people have not discovered still, that is just outside the Alta Fjord, that have great possibilities for people that is into sea to Somi experience, to go up in that beautiful landscapes, fjord landscape, and to enjoy the views up there in the mountain. It will be very great for us to offer to people. So we're working for that. We'll see. And now we have we have been renovating three of our apartments with panorama window to the sea, to round zone. And we have one of them is to the mountains. And we are offering to keep these apartments open during the winter, just to see how it functions, because there are many possibilities for people to activate themselves on Ceylan. For nature lovers, for outdoor lovers, Ceylan is the right place. So we have apartments that have all the conditions for you to live with your friends, with your family, with that have a full equipped kitchen that you can cook for yourself. So I am offering that now in Facebook, like a Helge Hitta. You can, that people that have no cabin to go in the weekend can consider to go to Ceylan. It's quite easy. There is a passenger boat from Alta all the way to Ceylan. On Fridays, there is three boats, one in the morning, one in the middle of the day, and one in the afternoon. And on Sunday, there is one in the afternoon, evening, coming back to Alta. So it's a great, I think, opportunity for that ones that want to explore the outside part of Alta, in the Alta Fjord.
Henry, the Ceylan is like a national park. Is that ever a problem that it's a national park and you are running like a business on a national park? Is it any like hiccups with things you can and cannot do in the park?
Not really. Ceylan House is not located inside the national park. That's good and bad, because it could have been even better if we were inside of the national park. But we are just in the limit. So behind the house, there are three marked paths that Ceylan National Park Organization and Alta Commune have been marking for people that want to go up there. And if they want to continue, they can just continue. So we are not inside of the national park, and we have great relation with the leaders of Ceylan National Park. So it have never been a problem for us being so close at the same time that we are not inside of the national park. It's more like an advantage, because there is a lot of people around the world looking for exploring national parks. And Ceylan is one of the most beautiful places, at least for me. So So I think it is, and it will be a great advantage for us to have it so close there, especially in the summer when people can access very easy. Just behind the house, you go in the path, and then when you get the viewpoint, you can consider if you want just to stay there and enjoy the view, or if you want to go deeper in Selva National Park. That is very, very nice. It's very green. And it has, I remember I made a publication when I was still not living here in Norway. I came in my second summer here in Norway. We had the chance to go around in the national park for one day. We started like at 9 in the morning and we end up like at 7. And we started just from back of Seiland House and we end up at around Hagstaven. It's the other part of the road in Seiland House, in Seiland, sorry. And it was so beautiful because it was so green. But at the same time, we could find the snow. Ah. We could play throwing balls in the middle of the summer, balls of snow. We found rivers. We found the incredible nature, flowers, butterflies over there, lakes. We could fish in the lake. So there are so many opportunities to enjoy that for people that are into nature, into outdoor activities. It's so, so beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect place. I think I have been in Ceylon once when I worked as an electrician. I think one of the fish farm companies had some mærer, like this fish where they are storing the fish in the fjords somewhere in close to that area. So I think I remember a little bit off, but I've never been like on a tour on Ceylon, but it sounds quite perfect actually.
You should do it. You should do it. And not only as a day tour, it's nice. Ceylon, we used to say that you enjoy it when you go for 2 or 3 days. At least you have 2 overnights and you have 3 days for activities. It's very nice just to go out. Even if you don't want to go up in the mountains, you just go around the coastline and it's so rich in nature. You find so many nice things and you find, for example, from the shore, you can see sometimes dolphins jumping around. Nice. You can see sea eagles all around. And if it is in the summer or in the spring, the nature is coming up, so beautiful flowers, so many kind of different flowers that I could never imagine when I was thinking in Cuba, what is Norway? Yeah. I thought it was just snow, cold.
Yeah.
And when I came here and I experienced what it was, a summer in Norway, wow, it's so beautiful. And I feel lucky to have the possibility to enjoy the summer in Ceylon also, because there are so many possibilities to enjoy time there and not get bored. And also to relax for people that want to go to a place to be on their own, to enjoy being with themselves. That's the right place to be. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, do you work all the time or do you have any spare time? And if you have, what do you like to do in your spare time?
Well, I have been getting hobbies here. And one of my favorite now in this season is the Northern Lights.
Ah.
I want to learn how to take pictures of the Northern Lights. And I have been already taking and it's not so bad. It helped a lot with my marketing job. And at the same time, I enjoy it. It's funny when you say, do you have a spare time? Because I like so much the work I'm doing that my husband have to say, stop working. No, I'm taking Northern Lights picture. It's part of my hobby. It's something I enjoy. But that's work too, Diabella. Yeah. If I want to go to tours in the mountains and I'm taking pictures, you are working now. But it's because your country is so beautiful that I want that people get to know that. So that's my hobby. Taking pictures of Northern Lights, going on tours, being outdoor. That I'm loving here. Because in Cuba, I remember, even if we have such a nice nature, I don't think we enjoy it like I do here. there I was a hard worker. I was all the time working, studying at the same time. I was going to language school in the evenings, and then I was reading a lot because I came from a sport school. All my secondary school and my pre-university was in a sport school. And then when I came to the university, I was very behind from the other students. And then I was reading and working. So you don't really think about, oh, now in the weekend I will take a mountain tour. You don't do that. But here I do that. That's my hobby, to be out, to make activities. And of course, I have a son who enjoys a lot being here too. So we both enjoy going out in the mountains. And the Northern Lights, I'm passionate about that. And sometimes he's 12. My husband is already in bed and I call him, Stig, you have to come out. There is Northern Lights now. Yamela, I'm a guide for Northern Lights. I know how it is. I'm Norwegian. But it's impressive for me. It's a new experience all the time. So I don't get tired. Maybe one day, but I don't get tired of that.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think when I have lived here all my life, I'm very like you're saying, you are used to the nature in Cuba. Like I am used to nature here, so I don't appreciate it as much as I should do. And I'm not so much out in nature because we've been there all my life, and it's like I have normalized it. Sadly.
But do you know what? When I go to Cuba now, we go to mountain tours. We try to enjoy nature. I think I have just discovered that here in Norway. And it's great because now I enjoy it more, my country. We explore more when we are in Cuba now than I used to do in my normal life, in all my years living in Cuba. So you know that we have a Caribbean bar in Ceylon?
No, I didn't know that.
It's a funny story, but it came from a day when we were in Cuba sitting in a cafe, and my husband started to make a drawing in a napkin. And he said, did you know that the Gulf Stream is what keep the coastline around the north of Norway, and around Ceylon warm? Yes. So do you know that you keep my life warm and you bring you bring this happiness, this music, this Latin culture, Latin temperament, as he said, to Norway? We have to do that in Ceylon too, he said. And then we were, what? Yeah, maybe a Caribbean bar. Because I had experience about mojitos, caipirinha.
Perfect.
So now in Ceylon, you can go and we can serve you a mojito, piña colada, caipirinha, a lot of Caribbean drinks, and made from scratch. Like I have been seeing that in my life in Cuba. I know how to do it from scratch, not buying something in Big Monopoly to mix or something. No, I buy the mint, I buy all the ingredients to make it from scratch. And it's great. Some people go there and enjoy it a lot. And in the first years in Ceylon, we used to have Caribbean nights. Before Corona, especially in the Ramadan days. I don't know if you have heard about that. But there used to be a weekend event there in Ramadan area. So people from Qualfjord, Hakstab and Atneset were enjoying activities the whole weekend. And there we started with our Caribbean nights. And we kept it for a while until Corona came. But we have this service to offer to our tourists, and it is like 6A is the Caribbean part of me on sale.
It sounds like the perfect Instagram video, mixing the drink and serving it under the Northern Light or something.
Yes.
But if you could give yourself one advice, as yourself when you were 20, with all the experience you have today, if you could give your younger self advice with all the experience you have today, what would that be?
One advice to myself?
Yeah, as a younger self, with all the knowledge you have today.
I think I use a lot of time learning about Cuba and about our area, but I think if I were younger again, the advice would be to learn more about the international world, because in Cuba you get just as I call it a layer of art, a layer of music, a layer of social studies, but you don't get the whole panorama around the world. Mm. And even when I met my husband, I was Norway. I know it's a cold country, but where is it? And so we don't get so much knowledge, at least we didn't get. Now, as I told you, there is more internet access, there is, the world is more open for Cuban, but before it was almost a taboo. So if I could come back to that years, I think I will say, no, Diamela, you have to learn about the world. Ah. Because even when I was working with international relations, it was a challenge for me that I didn't have knowledge, not even about geography, to be able to understand how the world functions, religions and all that. We got religion in the school, but we didn't get why there was war around the world because of religion. So all that kind of general knowledge about the world, international culture and history, I could have liked to take it if I could go back to that years.
Mm. Just learn about more about the world, basically.
Mm.
It's very good advice. And then I will just want to thank you for coming to the podcast and talking a lot of Cuba and Alta and your experience in life. So thank you for the attendance, I think. Yeah.
Thanks for inviting me.
No problem.
It was a pleasure, and I enjoyed like a conversation with a friend.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody.